Hello, I'm Keith Powell, and welcome to the best of Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio International. The following edition of the program from the archives was broadcast on the 28th of January, 2012. It's a program actually that somebody had requested because we actually interviewed someone who talks about how they got started in ham radio. Enjoy. And you're listening to Media Network Plus from PCJ Radio, broadcasting worldwide on the World Radio Network, Sirius XM in North America, and Sky Digital. You can also find us online, www.pcjmedia.com/Media Network Plus. Many of you who are shortwave fans may have noticed something unusual, and that was a blackout of the bands. This solar storm, which occurred earlier this week, just didn't affect HF, but also satellite communications. So joining us now is our own propagation guru, Dan Hensley, to tell us a little bit more about what happened this week. Dan, I want to ask you a question. This week we saw a lot of solar activity. There was a lot of interruptions on the HF bands, but not just the HF bands. In fact, earlier this week, I was watching television at home, one of the satellite channels, and for about 2 hours, the signal kept breaking up, and I was getting pixels, then it was fine, and then there was freeze frame and everything else. What happened here? Was this caused by a very large geomagnetic storm?
Actually, it was. It was a result of an M-class solar flare that was predicted last week on the Media Network Plus show during the propagation forecast, and that M-class flare actually turned into a major solar storm. It interrupted, actually, frequencies, as far as I'm aware, between 14 megahertz, which is a 20-meter band, as far up as at least 1.2 gigahertz. I'm aware of several amateur radio repeaters in the United States that were having trouble effectively hearing signals, especially one in Phoenix, Arizona. I was listening to via CQ100. And there was an RF link put up there by someone associated with that group. And as these guys were going back and forth in the mobile trying to talk to each other, they're using 20, 30, 50 watts, and nobody can hear each other into the repeater. They're saying, the repeater's really noisy. We don't know why. This is really odd. And this is a UHF system. So I start looking around. I get on Facebook. And I'm looking around other places, and I run across it. Here we go. There was a solar storm.
One of the things that I noticed is that stations that for me are normally extremely clear, let's say like Radio Australia or Radio Japan, it was almost like silence, just as if they turned off the transmitters.
Yeah, that'll happen when a solar magnetic storm actually interrupts the radio propagation, and that's effectively what actually happened. It was so strong. It was like when I looked, it was about R2, maybe heading into an R3, and it can do that. It's like effectively throwing a blanket or plugging up a hole in your sink. It just stops the flow of everything.
And that was Dan Hensley. Dan will be back later on in the show to let us know what we can expect over the next 7 days.
Media Network Plus.
Yes, radio's stripping. I'm sure that some people might get excited by that. Anyway, as you may or may not know, I will be attending this year's SWL Winterfest in Plymouth Meeting, Pennsylvania. This year marks the 25th anniversary. So I thought that, you know, during the month of February, we would bring you a couple of one-on-one interviews with SWLs and what made them interested in the hobby. The first one is Mark Cody. He lives in Ontario, Canada, and is a member of the DX Association of Ontario. Mark was also the winner of the PCJ contest that we had for members of the Happy Station Club, and he received a Texan PL660. So we called him up at his home in Ontario, and this is what he had to say. Mark, you've been an SWL for many, many years now. What got you hooked as an SWL? Was it something that you came across by accident, or were you sort of led into that direction by, let's say, certain family members?
My late father was a ham in the early part of the century. His call letters were 3LJ, so that was before he had VE and VA. I'm the last of seven kids, and I'm the only one that showed an interest in radio. So he's the one that told me all about it.
You know, it's interesting because you've been around for a while, and it's amazing. Do you look at, let's say, technology today and think back, wow, look at how and where we've come to?
Oh yeah, for sure. From the tube sets and the boat anchors, and I've owned enough of them that if I had a dime for every radio that I drilled over, I'd be a rich man.
But when you think back, let's say, of all the receivers that you've had, is there something, let's say, about those old vacuum tube receivers that you miss?
I think it's the audio, because it's the same with amplifiers. Like today's a solid state can't beat a good old tube driven audio amplifier. So there's something about that. Now, granted, you didn't have the competing stations back then, like with CRI or all over the map. So the selectivity wasn't a big factor back then.
You know, recently there was somebody I was speaking to, and he started listening way back in the 1940s, and he got his first digital receiver in the 1990s, and he said, okay, granted, let's say, he said the digital receiver didn't have the same sound as the big Telefunken, you know, grand radio, but he says tuning to a station was much easier, just being able to punch in the, you know, the frequency, and that's it.
Yeah, for sure. They are still making sets with half-decent audio. Like, I like the audio from the Eaton E1. I'm presently using the new Elenco, the DXR8. It's got fairly good audio.
Mm-hmm.
But then I also have a couple of older radios, like the Panasonic RF2200, which is really good audio. And then I've got an old Drake SPR4, which isn't great audio, but it still pulls the signals out.
Now, you know, back in those days when you started as an SWL, most of the receivers were either made in Europe. They were made in Belgium, the Netherlands, Germany, the United Kingdom. There was also a number of models that came from Japan. And in the last maybe 25 years, we've seen some coming from Japan, but now increasingly more from China. China, a company called Texan, is the largest manufacturer of shortwave radio sets in the world. And I remember the first Chinese-made SW receiver that I bought in 1996. I have to be honest, I thought it was a piece of junk. It was absolutely terrible. But when I think about, let's say, the products that Texan has been putting out for, let's say, the last 5 or 6 years, I'm really amazed.
Well, you can go back a little farther than that when Grundy came out with the Satellite 800, which was a Texan product, and that was in 2000. Mm-hmm. And I had that for several years until a hydro strike took it out. And that was, of course, then there was a lot of Drake technology in there as well.
Now, when you started listening, what were you mostly listening to?
I was listening to European broadcasters and tropical band stations.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was tickled pink when I could hear Australia.
You know, there's something that that I've heard a debate going on within the SWL community, because from what I've seen for the last 20 years or 25, 30 years from when I started listening, there seems to be this kind of a tension almost between SWLs and DXers. Would you agree with that?
that tension, I think, is a lot less these days, because there seems to be more people into a shortwave listening than DXing. I've always considered myself a hybrid, where I enjoy the DXing, but I also like sitting back and listening to programs as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because a few years ago, I was speaking to an SWL from Australia, and he said what used to annoy him is, he said, sometimes people would put him in the same category as these, as some people, let's say, that would just write a station, send a reception report, and never listen again just to receive something. And he said, I used to hate being put in that category.
I knew a fair number of people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And some of them who would just continually report just to get the latest edition of the QSL card. I dropped QSLing many, many years ago because there was one man that I met through the Ontario DX Association who basically either tape recorded or just wrote stuff down. He said, my logbook is my verification. And I certainly ended up saving a lot on postage.
Now, for today, we've seen a lot of cutbacks that have taken place, especially targeting North America. BBC World Service no longer targets their broadcasts there. Swiss Radio International, Deutsche Welle, Radio Nederland, there are still some on the air. Is it still easy to find stations to be able to listen to?
Well, you have to adjust your time. Like, I find, like, with Radio Netherlands and Deutsche Welle, because I'm now retired, I can listen to them in the afternoon for their Africa service, and I hear them quite well. It's the evenings where I notice you can go a couple hours and then wondering, like, who's on the air anymore?
Mm-hmm. But let's say mornings and afternoons are still good times then.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, I wake up with Radio Australia every morning.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's hard to hear them here in the evening. But, they're there in the morning. And if you want DX, you can pick up some, Thailand and a few other countries. And then, like you say, the mid to late afternoon.
Now, let me guess, to see if my memory serves me correct, but the Radio Australia frequency, does that happen to be 9580?
Yeah,
it
and
is.
And then at 1400 is for an extra hour, so I'll switch over to 9590.
Mm-hmm.
But that 9580 frequency, that's been there since the dawn of time.
Well, you know, Nigel Holmes, who's the frequency manager of Radio Australia, when I was speaking to him, I said, 9580, I said, you target that towards the Pacific, but he said, but I said, it does. Depending, say, 90% of the time, depending on propagation, gives an excellent signal into North America. Had you ever thought of changing? And he said, well, for all the time that I've been at Radio Australia, he said, we target it towards the Pacific because, as most Radio Australia transmissions, but he said, we knew that it got into North America, which is the only reason why we keep that frequency and we don't change it.
Yeah, for sure. And I know I sent an email once to Saturday Night Country, and I got a nice reply back that Felicity Urquhart was quite pleased that I'm listening to her every Saturday morning.
not too long ago, I was talking to a friend of mine in on the west coast of Canada, and we were talking on Facebook, and I was saying to him, I said, okay, tell me if you can pick up this frequency. Tell me if you can pick up this one. And he was doing the same. And it was interesting because I believe it was Radio New Zealand. I gave him a Radio New Zealand frequency, which is targeted towards the Pacific, which here in Taiwan, we cannot pick up. But he was able to get it on the west coast of Canada, which is quite amazing.
Our founder of the ODXA, Harold Sellers, he's since moved out to the left coast, and it's amazing some of the stuff he picks up from there.
Mm-hmm. Now, how long have you been a member of the Ontario DX Club?
30-plus years.
30-plus years. And is the Ontario DS Club only have members in Canada or also in other parts of the world as well?
Well, we eliminated membership a couple of years ago, so everything's free on the net, so you don't have to be a member. You just log on or just go to odxa.on.ca, and you can access our magazine. And we accept, like I handle the international loggings column, and we accept loggings from all over the world.
You know, you think, because there's another organization in Canada called the Canadian International DS Club, that's Sheldon Harvey. I don't know if he's still running it, but he was running it for a long time. Was there ever like a friction between the two clubs?
Not really. The only, I remember about 25, 30 years ago, there was a policy that if you were an editor for one, you couldn't do the same with the other club. It was just, there was a distinction. Like, if you're on the board of directors of one, you couldn't be, you know, on the other. But aside from that, it was a fairly amicable arrangement.
Now, Mark, you live just outside of Toronto in Peterborough, Ontario. Is it easy, let's say I was to head to Peterborough or head to Toronto, is it easy to find SWL receivers in those two places?
For sure. You've got, there's two ham radio stores, Durham Radio, which is in a Toronto suburb called Whitby, and there's Radio World, which is in the north end of Toronto. They carry like Eaton and Icom products.
Now, you just mentioned a moment ago that you've collected so many receivers over the years. If I was to, let's say, have a mental picture in my head, would my mental picture be just shelves and of rows and rows and rows of radios?
Not that bad. there's a friend of mine in London, Robert Ross. His basement's like that. I've basically traded over the years, so I don't have that many still. But I've owned quite a few over the years.
And if I was to ask you right now, which is your favorite one at this very moment, the one that you're using the most right now? What is it?
The Elenco DXR8, mm-hmm. Because it has the 12 kilohertz IQ output, so that I can listen to DRM.
And what is DRM selection like where you are?
Not great. Spain or REE has a transmitter in Costa Rica that has a DRM program, but I'm probably going to have to do a lot of work on my antennas in the spring, because there is one guy I know, he occasionally picks up New Zealand's DRM program.
Mark, thank you very much for taking some time to talk with us today. It's always interesting to hear from other SWLs and how they got interested in shortwave, as well as their stories surrounding it. Thank you very much for taking some time out today.
All right, take care.
That was Mark Cody in Ontario, Canada, talking about his history on how he got interested in shortwave radio.
Hello.
Hello.
Here's the Happy Station Show, calling listeners everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's your station of smiles across.
Hello. I'm Keith Perron, host of the Happy Station Show from PCJ Radio International, which next year will celebrate its 90th anniversary. Along with many new listeners that we have attracted over the last 7 years, there are also many of you that tune in who remember the Eddie Starts and Tom Meyer days.
Things are getting to be more improvised any minute. What was the name of this beautiful piece? Nobody knows. The trouble I've seen. Kiss it up.
Over the past few years, many of you have commented that you enjoy when we go into the archives and broadcast material that hasn't been heard in decades. with a number of people asking if the Happy Station Show and Radio Nederland archives will be made available. And guess what? Yes, that's right, yes. The answer is yes.
Can you imagine when Happy Station was only 7 years old, you started...
I would like to invite you to become a patron at Patreon. At Patreon, you will be able to hear the latest Happy Station show. And for those who are patrons, you will have full access to unedited Happy Station shows and Radio Netherlands content, both in sound and vision, from the past 89 years. All these sound recordings have been remastered from the original tapes and discs. And let's talk about films for a moment. That's right, Happy Station did produce some films. And we went back to this production studio and remastered them. Now just look at how the original 16mm print looked before. But after spending numerous hours going frame by frame, now look at it.
It was really only a hunch. I had an intuition that... He had style enough.
Now, I know that many of you right now would like to see and hear these historical programs. Well, guess what? It's time for you to become a patron at Patreon. Those who become patrons at Patreon will be helping to support the digitization of all these tapes and films.
You cross your fingers, you hold your heart. It's curtain time and away we go.
Those who are patrons will also get rewards like rare music recordings, rare programs, books, and much more. Also, if we reach our goal of $200 a month, PCJ Radio International will produce special programs that will be broadcast on shortwave for you. So come on now, show your support today, become a patron at Patreon. For more information, visit www.patreon.com/PCJRadio. Once again, the Patreon page, of which we just mentioned a moment ago, is patreon.com/PCJRadio. Patreon.com/PCJRadio. And in certain regions of the world, I invite you to download the PCJ Radio app. It's not in all the app stores, only in particular reasons, but just do a search for PCJ Radio International in the App Store and you'll find us. We do plan to roll it out to all regions at the beginning of next year, which is actually only a few weeks away. It's amazing that it's already the middle of December, actually December the 15th, when the first transmission of this program goes out. Now, if there's a program from our archives that you would like to hear, do let us know. PCJ Radio International would always want to hear from you for that request. Our email address is pcjmedia@gmail.com, pcjmedia@gmail.com. And do let us know where you heard the program. If it was on shortwave, FM, medium wave, whatever wave, even through the internet, we'd love to know. So, on behalf of everyone here at PCJ Radio International, I'm Keith Powell, wishing you well. We'll see you again very soon for another edition of the best of Media Network Plus. 73 and 88 to the ladies.
yeah, 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 yeah.